This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to The Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Dr. Jerome Corsi back to the show. He's been on a few times before. He's a senior staff writer for WorldNet Daily. He's author of the children's book, Goodnight Obama, a Parody, and the 2016 best-selling book, Partners in Crime, the Clinton Scheme to Monetize the White House for Personal Profit, as well as many other books and articles. Jerry, welcome back. How are you?
Good, Jason. Great to be back with you. And by the way, my Goodnight Obama is a parody. It's a cartoon book like that.
But not a children's book, right?
It's not really a children's book. It can be. I mean, it's written like a nursery rhyme, and I recorded it even on my Twitter feed, you know, Jerome_Corsi. I went to the Harvard Club Library down in New York City and recorded it sitting in a chair as if it were like a goodnight story.
Right.
Kids could appreciate it, but it was written for the humor for adults as well.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, those are amazing things, you know, when you go see some of these very creative movies, mostly published by the left-wing media, of course. You know, they appeal to kids and adults at the same time because they have this double entendre. You know, it's very clever how they do that.
I'll just give you a little hint of as we're starting here what it's like. I mean, what I thought is we ought to have the last laugh on Obama leaving office. And so the cover of it has got Obama, he's in his pajamas. You know, it's Good Night Obama. It's blue Democrat pajamas with footies and a little head cap, and he's hugging a pillow.
Does he have a safety pin? Because
no,
you know,
but there's this,
he needs to wear
no,
a safety
he should,
pin
he should,
too, right?
Yeah, there's a cigarette burning at the desk on a ashtray, and he's got his golf clubs near his desk, and it says Good Night Obama.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Muslim moon, and through the window you can see it at the back of the
Oval
Office.
Yeah, I'm just noticing that. I didn't catch that before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at least, he's got the American flag in the picture. That's impressive.
Yeah, that's true. That's important. Yeah. And then goodnightobama.com will take you to Amazon. You can see the cartoons and quite a few of the pictures. I'll just read you one or two. I mean, here's the Reverend Wright in the with the roosters in the farmyard. He's feeding them, and the roosters are walking around with their little ISIS flags and their black headbands, their AK-47s, and it says, you know, the evil ISIS once called a JV team. And the next page you got in Hillary Clinton's classified emails printed by the ream, and she's sitting in a toilet in her beautiful pink pantsuit, and it's got surrounded by reams of emails, and she's trying to figure out how to use her iPhone. So, you know, that's what Goodnight Obama's about. It's meant to be a parody of all the Obama policies that I think looked at from a certain perspective. We all view open borders and signing executive orders, all these things that are not what we expect the president to be doing. And we can look back at 8 years and we ought to have the last laugh. That's what this book is all about.
That's fantastic. We'll definitely go into that more in our discussion. But, you know, Jerry, I want to make sure we talk about what to expect with the Trump administration, especially as it relates to personal finance. You know, all the listeners want to know, how should I invest for this? You know, what's the housing market going to be like? We have a lot of real estate investor listeners, as you know. What can we expect out of the first year, the first 100 days, the next 4 years, you know, to go all over the board, maybe the next 8 years? What should we be thinking about and looking out for with the Trump administration?
I've known Donald Trump a long time. I've known him actually for decades, and I was a very big supporter from the very first. I think Donald Trump is really a brilliant businessman, and his political skills are quite extraordinary. He's going to have to adjust to Washington, and it's going to be a shock when he hits the bureaucracy and the GOP.
He's not used to that. He's used to getting things done, right? This will be Washington is the antithesis of getting things done. It's the complete opposite, right?
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, it's astounding to you as president how little power you really have over the bureaucracy, which is set with its rules and laws that you know, entrenched in civil service. Anybody can, you know, break the logjam. Trump will, because he's not conventional. I mean, look at how many jobs he's already brought back to the United States simply
by... And he's not even president yet, yeah.
And look at how much he's, you know, I mean, his comments yesterday or the day before when the UN had this terrible resolution against Israel, which is disgraceful, and Obama, it appears, engineered it and certainly did not veto it, which is shocking. And, you know, Trump tweets out that the UN is basically worthless and a place where people go to have a good time. And, you know, that's the first step to saying we're not going to fund it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and Trump will not, I mean, I've seen him in his businesses, and he always looks like he's going to lose. He always looks like he's behind. He always looks like other people got him fooled. And then he wins.
He's like a phoenix rising from ashes over and over again, isn't he?
And he has the ability to, as he says, you know, in the art of the deal and negotiating. And he is very, very, I think, astute when it comes to picking people and getting rid of people. I mean, take a look at the campaign. He had Corey Lewandowski. Well, Lewandowski helped him in the beginning of the campaign get himself established. And he had Paul Manafort, who was good at managing the delegate process through the convention to get him nominated, and he ended up with Kellyanne Conway, who, you know, a very professional, level-headed manager who experienced, and I think was a steady force on Trump through the end when he's on all these stump speeches every day. So he picked his people and didn't hesitate to move to the next people when the people he initially picked weren't doing the job the way he wanted it done. Clearly, some people are going to be disappointed in some of the things he does, or won't be fast enough, it won't be quick enough, it won't be complete enough. But I think you're going to see changes from the get-go. Executive orders that Obama has signed, rescinded, legislation introduced to reduce taxes. We're going to get a Supreme Court nomination that's going to be a lot better than the one that, you know, Obama was going to put forward, did put forward. In general, I'm very optimistic. I mean, can think of what, to me, a calamity it would have been had Hillary Clinton been elected. It would have been depressed all of us.
Okay, so let's kind of see if we can walk in the moccasins of someone listening who wanted Hillary to win, or maybe they didn't even like Hillary. A lot of people didn't like Hillary. They liked Bernie Sanders. And, you know, they're on the left side of the political aisle. And you know, I have a feeling for as much controversy as Trump has caused, and as much, I really believe that he's purposeful. Done a lot of that. Like, it's an intentional thing to get, it's a ploy to get media attention and so forth. But I have a feeling some of our friends on the left are going to be a lot more pleased than they think they are. And, you know, mostly at the end of the day, everybody votes their pocketbook. I mean, let's be honest, okay? I think wages are going to increase. Jobs are going to come back to America. Obviously, we saw the way this played out in the Rust Belt. These formerly high-paying union jobs, well, they're still high-paying, but there's just a lot less of them. I think Trump, through different kinds of methods than the Democrats have employed that, you know, worked for a while and then failed miserably, ultimately, which they always do. You know, I think people are going to be pretty pleased, actually. I think we're going to see wages go up. I don't think you need to make a law that everybody gets $15 an hour minimum wage. I think you just need to control the borders, and that's just naturally going to occur. Am I wrong about that, or are some people on the left going to be a lot happier than they think they are about Trump? Or at least maybe not as displeased as they think they're going to be.
Well, that's always the case when somebody's in office. I mean, first of all, Trump is not going to be politically correct, and he's going to say things that do offend people on the left who are, you know, so hypersensitive these days. And I think we've gone too far with political correctness.
I agree.
The economy is going to improve. I mean, look at the stock market has already taken off, and the anticipation of lower taxes and less regulation, repatriating money the corporations have overseas, all of these are going to be steps, I think, that are going to be welcomed in an economy which has had under 3% growth throughout Obama's term, which has never happened before. Obama has been the, you know, slowest economic growth that we've had since the 1930s.
One thing I want to say about that, Jerry, and feel free to comment on this idea. I think Obama really had, as much as he took, you know, he blamed George Bush for 6 to 7 years of his presidency, and then with his jackass remark the other day about how he could have won if he was up against Trump rather than Hillary. Boy, Hillary's just got to be totally insulted, as you wisely pointed out. But Obama was coming off such a low, such a devastating time, the worst time in 7 decades, that it's sort of easy to look good after that. And even with that, and with manipulating the numbers, it really wasn't that good. I mean, the homelessness rate, the food stamp rate, you know, a lot of people are really suffering. Obama was a pretty oppressive force, I think.
If we go back to the period 2009 when Obama came in and his whole stimulus programs, they didn't have the multiplier effect that creating jobs in the private economy does. Government spending never does. And the public works created through the, you know, supposedly shovel-ready programs at that time did not create permanent employment. The history of the Obama administration has been declining employment in terms of full-time jobs, made up with part-time jobs and lower real wages across the board for Americans. So this has been a tough period where we've continued to struggle losing manufacturing jobs. Number of welfare, as you point out, the increase of poverty stayed about the same as it was during the Bush administration, but severe poverty, those, you know, earning less than 50% of the poverty limit. These severe numbers have dramatically increased under Obama. So you've had a widening even further of the gap between the wealthy and the poor. You know, Obama's government-engineered economy through regulations and the expansion of jobs in Washington.
Central planning,
increased taxes, Obamacare. All of these have not been growth stimulating, and that's reflected in, I think, the last 4-year period under 3% growth was Herbert Hoover. And we've had 8 years under 3% growth for Barack Obama. It's historic in terms of its low. The failure to generate growth cannot continually be blamed on something that happened, you know, 8 years ago when Obama's had plenty of time to implement policies. I think you're going to see it won't take Donald Trump 8 years. I think within the first 30 to 60 days, you're going to see economic stimulus just by pushing Congress to enact tax changes, tax reductions, and pounding on the bureaucracy to get fewer regulations implemented and departments to rescind regulations that have been implemented. And through the executive orders being rescinded, I think Obama will see a lot of programs he thought were in place go by the boards in the first day.
Very interesting. So to my broad question about the left being more pleased than they think they're going to be. I mean, they act like, you know, some dictator has taken over the country after this election. It's just unbelievable. Am I right about that? I mean, you know, do they...
Political left has acted in a very increasingly far-left ideological way in which, you know, the lens of political correctness, like if you don't agree with the far-left, you're, for instance, a climate denier, and there's even recommendations you be put in prison or convicted of a crime. I mean, the left sees all the truth, justice, and wisdom is on their social welfare, government-generated central planning projects. And First Amendment, which we have in place, I think wisely by our founding fathers, is there to object and argue back and forth. There is no settled science on anything, let alone climate change. There is always a debate in science. It always is evolving as new paradigms enter and old paradigms go by the way. The same in economics in terms of, you know, the need to continue with creative thought and challenge ideas. We are not in a closed society that has Pravda-like news is detrimental to the kind of free discussion our founding fathers wanted for our constitutional republic. And I think the far left has forgotten this and rescinded into their, you know, withdrawn into their ideological shell so that anybody who doesn't agree with them offends them and they want silenced. And that's just not in accordance with the constitutional republic that we have.
You are definitely right, and it's interesting to just kind of look back and see how that worked on the other side in the last couple of elections. And I mean, it's just so, you can't win this debate. It's just crazy.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I mean, I wrote Abomination against Barack Obama. I've objected to his policies, fought him very hard on issues of policy. I don't dislike President Obama. I didn't say he wasn't my president. He was my president. I accepted that he was legitimately elected. I accepted that we lost. And I accepted that, you know, conservatives would have to make a stronger argument to the American people to win. Barack Obama was a very skillful, charismatic politician, and I objected only to his far-left policies. It was never personal, never dislike, never rancor, and I was never, you know, arguing, in a sense, the extreme positions that only get accused of it by the left, but my positions were always, you know, wanting him to follow the Constitution, follow the rules, and be more limited in his execution of the presidency. But I never, you know, basically, as the Democrats are doing now, going around with riots saying we can't accept him as our president because he's a racist.
Right before the election, during one of the debates, they kept hounding him and just vilifying him, saying, you know, he might not accept the results, right? Remember,
And that's the hypocrisy
it's
of the
so
left.
Ridiculous,
Hillary
yeah.
Clinton could say to Trump, well, you've got to accept this. It'll hurt the democracy if you lose. Of course, she loses, and then the left goes berserk, and Hillary Clinton has her lawyers supporting the recount.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's completely hypocritical, and that's the problem with ideological rigidity that I think the far left has gotten into. And the Democratic Party today is a party much more of Bill Ayers and not the party of Jack Kennedy or Hubert Humphrey.
Yeah, Bill Ayers has been on the show twice. I got a lot of heat for interviewing him, but I got to tell you, he was a pretty interesting interview, especially the first time. You know, he was a spirited,
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
There's no doubt that Bill Ayers is highly intelligent, but he's also extremely left.
Oh, yeah.
And makes no hesitation about being a socialist or
well, he described himself in the second interview, Jerry. First interview, he described himself as a communist with a small c.
Well,
and I reminded him of that during the second interview a couple years later, and he said, yeah, that sounds like something I'd say.
I've interviewed him, too, and I've met him, and, you know, he can be charming in person. He's very highly intelligent, but very far left. And what he wants to do in terms of society, in terms of the central planning, government-managed social justice rules, I think have always failed in practice.
My objection
is that the far left positions, as you know, enticing and convincing as they might sound, don't work that way in practice and have never worked put in practice in any government anywhere in the world, including Venezuela.
Or at any time in history, of course. So the economy, what can we expect? Trump is an interesting mix. You know, he's certainly not a traditional conservative or libertarian by any means. He's kind of Keynesian. I mean, he wants to spend $1 trillion right out the door. He won over a lot of the left. I mean, what can we expect from him?
The trillion he wants to spend out of the door, you know, as you say, is not, see, he says infrastructure. And the left immediately thinks, you know, building highways and building bridges and WPA kind of work. That's not what Trump means. Trump understands, as I think I do, and I'll be writing more about this at WND after the first of the year, that the kind of public works the left always wants to do have very low multiplier effects and are not going to be the kind of infrastructure that will boost the economy. They don't actually generate very many jobs. I mean, you should have seen this in the Obama stimulus programs, which were motivated by, along the same theme. The type of public works jobs that do work are ones that are where user fees will pay the freight. And public-private partnerships or public-authorized private partnerships that can be arranged with private financing, not government money, have the potential to build the intelligent highways of the future and the airports that can take SSTs and the next generation of infrastructure that we're going to need. But it isn't that you go out with picks and shovels and repair the bridges that we've got in place. That needs to be done, but it can be done in a much more tax-efficient way if the economy is growing. What Trump wants to do, I think, and you're going to see, is going to be the type of infrastructure work that builds the next generation of America. I look at it, all our roads are outmoded because they are not ready for smart cars or driverless vehicles. Our airports are outmoded. I mean, take a look at LaGuardia or San Diego or even National and at Reagan Airport in Washington. A lot of our airports were built in the 1930s, and you know, current are just bound in by cities that have grown up around them. You know, and you've got to take a look at what airports like Denver have done when Denver abandoned an inner city airport and built the current Denver International Airport. I mean, these are the ideas of modern infrastructure projects that are not going to be done on taxpayer money.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so that's going to have a stimulus effect, and you believe that'll have a multiplier effect greater than any of the Obama programs. So that's good news for the economy. It's good news for jobs. What else?
Well, I think there also will be an effort to bring back jobs to the United States. If we do reduce taxes, if we do reduce regulations, it becomes much more economical to do business in the United States. And I think that's going to be an incentive for corporations. You're already seeing it happening. Corporations, instead of moving overseas, deciding they're going to stay here or bring jobs here. I think you'll find that the whole idea of economic growth has to do with finding the right multiplier effects so that you're creating permanent jobs. And what Obama's been doing, what government regulations and central management of the economy does, higher taxes, Obamacare, is it stifles competition, and it ultimately eliminates full-time jobs. I mean, Obamacare alone has been a great job killer because small businesses, which are the engine for job creation in the U.S. economy, don't want to take on employees where they have such a huge insurance obligation mandated, just by having a certain number of employees or more. This has forced us into more and more of a part-time economy, families working multiple jobs, and it has not been a growth factor for the U.S. economy. I think that's what you're seeing across middle America, which knows better than the statistics in Washington, which reduce unemployment by increasing the number of people who are out of the labor force. That's just a statistical manipulation, which doesn't fool anybody who can't find a job.
Yeah, no question about that. What about the business cycle? I mean, a lot of people are talking about how, per the business cycle, we're kind of due for a recession. Is Trump going to come in during a tough time, or is he going to overcome that, or does that not even really exist?
I think you're going to see an increasing of interest rates, and that's always...
We've already seen it, yeah.
The interest rates were kept artificially low, I think, to prop up Obama, because Obama's economy was so dismally low growth that higher interest rates at any point would have sent a shock through the stock market that would have, just the talk of interest rate raises under the Obama administration would send the stock market down 1,000 points. You're going to see a readjustment out of this debt, I think, both in the United States and the EU. I would not be surprised to see the EU break up and the euro go away. I think you're going to see, in the United States, growth is the only way we can get out of this debt cycle. Obama doubled the debt, which is a huge burden on future generations that's unappreciated by people who don't really understand the economics of it. We're going to have to work away from, $10 trillion, which Obama created in debt, or will have created when he leaves office. I think right now over $19 trillion is where it is. It was astounding. It doubled what he had been left by George W. Bush and equaled as much as all previous presidents put together had accumulated up to his presidency. I considered it to be irresponsible.
And I remember candidate Obama giving that speech about how he thought George Bush was being so irresponsible running up the debt.
Yeah,
you can't make this stuff up.
I think the left is actually going to be disappointed to see the economic growth under Trump.
Well, they were disappointed they didn't get $6 and $7 a gallon gas because that's what they wanted.
I mean, I've always said there's, I think that all this climate change and global warming science is complete nonsense. I'm sorry, but I've looked at the science. I'm scientifically trained. I was ran randomized field experiments for the National Science Foundation. I'll admit I did social science, but I've taught statistics and understand time series analysis and the numbers generated here to argue climate change which was global warming then abandoned. It was first global freezing in the 70s.
Well, that's what Al Gore was, he was talking about in the 70s. He was talking about the coming ice age. It's crazy, of course it is. But listen, you know, we could do a whole nother three shows on that, and we have done lots of shows on that.
What I'm saying is that we're going to return to a carbon-based economy, carbon fuel-based economy. Coal's going to be reintroduced, I think clean coal. I don't think we're going to be seeing the end of gasoline or oil anytime near soon. I've always said we'll have little nuclear batteries in our cars before we'll ever be finished burning gasoline. Solar and wind just don't do it. Solar and wind have been a big boondoggle. They've been a massive scandal.
It's a government handout. It's a handout to the elites. It's Solyndra. I mean, yeah.
Solyndra and all of these scandals. And so I think, you know, there's a lot that the American public were reacting against in this election that has got to be taken seriously, and I think the economy is going to turn around.
One of the things I love that I heard early after the election was about, for every one new regulation, you have to eliminate two. And I think for real estate people, something that just cannot be understated is the impact of this terrible Dodd-Frank bill that has just had all sorts of unintended or possibly intended consequences that have just been disastrous when it comes to real estate and to free trade and to helping people. I mean, you know, it's like now the government is in the middle of the transaction preventing you from helping someone. It's mind-boggling. You know, it's all under the guise of we got to protect people from themselves, of course. That's always the pitch. But Trump has specifically mentioned Dodd-Frank. He wants to repeal it or at least soften it. And even without doing anything to the actual bill, you know, there's all the regulations that come out of every bill, right? And there's a lot of adjustments that can be made that can really, really just set the real estate market on fire. Not that it isn't already, but say, for example, we are going into a recession. Say that that's, you know, that really is happening. And I don't know, I'm not saying it is, but, you know, some are saying that, right? I mean, there's always the doom and gloomers out there. You know, but Dodd-Frank could just really counteract that. I mean, it could be incredible just by freeing up the reins of capitalism to let it do its thing. I think there could be a lot of success with just something like that. Even if rates continue to climb and if the economy goes through a cycle that's bad, just loosen up the regulations. Let the capital flow, and it will. It always does.
My objection to Dodd-Frank was the same as it was to Obamacare and to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You've got these massive pieces of legislation or trade dealings that, you know, run thousands of pages that no one's ever read, no one really comprehends, and they get passed without being fully considered in terms of their implications. Then you get bureaucrats who implement them, and they add, you know, times 10 the number of regulations. By the time you're done, you've so regulated and managed that no one really knows how to run a business anymore. I mean, costs of doing a business today are such that I sometimes wonder why anyone starts a new one.
Yeah, it's a good question.
We've got to get back to a less regulated. Again, this is one of the big arguments I have with the far left, is that government regulation is not going to be the way. They always think they can pass laws and make rules that'll make people do what they think is the right thing to do. You end up getting 10,000 rules and to screw a light bulb in, and no one's going to be able to follow these rules or read these rules, because often the bureaucrats who write them in the final analysis have never been part of the business and don't understand it. And they're regulating from certain principles of social justice in their minds that make sense, that actually produce less social justice than they've ever imagined.
That's always the case. It always backfires. It's just amazing how true that is in every case. What else do you want people to know? Maybe any questions I haven't asked you?
Take a look at my Good Night Obama. I think it's worth a laugh. I think we need to take a look at the open borders. I laugh about the open borders. Take down this wall. The wall Obama wants to take down is the border wall, and signing executive orders in his Crayolas at his desk. I mean, it's good fun. And it's meant, of course, anything poking fun at the left, you get accused of being a racist and a xenophobe and all the rest of it. Take a look at my Amazon reviews. But again, I think, you know, I was raised by the World War II generation that could poke fun at anything.
Yeah.
We've got to get back to Will Rogers being able to laugh at our politicians. And if we can't do that, I don't think America is going to sign on to an agenda of thought reform based upon the severity of the left on all of its accusations that we're all racist, xenophobes, all these things, and the political correctness. This election, I think, was a solid attack and repudiation of, you know, the left getting out of control and over the cliff. No one wants to discriminate, and I certainly don't, against LGBT. But, you know, I don't think we need to carry it to the extreme of talking about unisex bathrooms in the elementary schools and transvestites being the major concern in the military. I don't want to discriminate against transvestites or deny anybody any rights that they have. It's not my heart to do it. I've worked with people. I'm in New York. People say, well, you know, I'm homosexual. Do you object to that? You don't have to work with me. I said, wait a minute. Do I have to become homosexual? And they said, no. Well, fine. Probably that's not going to happen, but I don't care what you do. Why would I care? And that's, I think, where the left has got to have...
Yeah, if you're going to be a true libertarian, you can't pick and choose.
No,
so, yeah,
I mean,
I agree.
My point of view is such that we need to have sense when we deal with each other and some tolerance when we deal with each other, such that I can write a parody book, poke fun at things, and not be doing it in a mean-spirited way. It wasn't intended to be. I intended to have a laugh at some things I consider to be policies gone wild.
Give out your website.
I'm a senior staff reporter at WND.com. I'm writing there on a constant basis. WorldNet Daily, WND.com, and Jerome_Corsi at Twitter. The book is Good Night Obama, Jerome Corsi, C-O-R-S-I, GoodNightObama.com.
Jerome Corsi, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check out HartmanMedia.com for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.